Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we'll be reading a story called Will You Be My Mother When She's Dead? It's from a collection of stories called 54 Sleepless Nights, written by Tobias Wade. I do hope you'll check it out, and if you enjoy this story, consider supporting the author and buying yourself a copy. Links to the book will be in the description of this episode and or video, so I hope you enjoy this story. Let's get started. One of my students has been having trouble at home. I teach at an elementary school, and I'd like to think that I can always tell when one of my children isn't being well taken care of. Being chronically tired is always the first clue. It doesn't matter what the problem is. Stressing about it impacts their sleep and shows in their behavior. Delayed emotional development or desperately needing affection and approval is another sign. Children need love to grow as much as they do food and water. And if they aren't getting it at home, they're going to try to overcompensate while at school. It's difficult to tell sometimes, though, because social withdrawal and becoming numb to a world that only hurts them can be just as indicative of a problem. The child might also become rebellious and angry, fighting back at me or the other students in an attempt to assert some self-control to mask their helplessness. My first sign that something was wrong was when David started calling me Mom. Children get used to associating authority figures with their parents, and it's not unusual for one of them to accidentally call me Mom as a reflex. The mistake is immediately recognized, the student is embarrassed, and the others laugh, and that's usually the end of it. "Can we eat lunch outside today, Mom?" David asked me one day. Laughter from the class, a patient smile. "Do you want to try that question again?" I asked. But David didn't seem the least embarrassed. The little boy with the buzzed hair and taped up glasses scratched his head, as though genuinely bewildered that he'd said anything wrong. "Can we please eat lunch outside today, Mom?" The laughter was even louder this time. I didn't want to make a big deal about it in front of everyone, though, so I waited until recess when I asked David to stay after the other children had left. "Okay, Mom," David said. "You know that I'm your teacher, not your mother," I said sternly once we were alone. "No, thanks." "Excuse me?" "No, thank you," he added politely. "I've got enough other teachers. I want you to be my mom." "But what would your real mother think about that?" I asked. I silently cursed myself for being insensitive. What if his real mother was dead? But David only shook his little head, staring down at his feet as he said, "She wouldn't mind. She told me she doesn't like being a mother. I told her that's okay, because my teacher likes me and she can be..." "No," I interrupted, a bit too sharply. "I mean, of course, I like you, David, and I'm sure your mother loves you too. But you can only have one mother." "That's not true," David protested, red in the face. "Mark had a mom, and then she left and his dad found a new mom." "I want a new mom too." "Well, that's different. That sounds like a stepmom," I said, unsure of how to begin untangling that for him. "I mean, you can only have one mother at a time, and you still have one. So, will you be my mother when she's dead?" he asked innocently. I opened and closed my mouth without any sound coming out. Then, "David, I don't ever want to hear you saying something so horrible ever again. And tell your real mother that I'd like to have a word with her." "That isn't a no," his voice trailed off expectantly. I spoke to David's mother on the phone that evening. I tried to broach the subject with her, but I hardly understood a word she said between her thick Eastern European accent, the booming television, and the loud home full of jostling voices. I'm pretty sure that she promised to spend more time with David, though, and I would have thought that that was enough if David hadn't spoke into the phone right before I hung up. "Don't worry, she doesn't know," David whispered conspiratorially. "Excuse me?" "She doesn't know, Mom. She can't taste it in her drink." And then the line went dead. I called again twice, but the ringing must have been drowned out in the loud home. I thought about calling the police, but decided how ridiculous it would be to suspect a 9-year-old of plotting murder. So I let it go, and I put it out of my head, like a child pretending something wasn't real just because it was too horrible to imagine. David didn't come to school the next day, but that was no reason to be suspicious. Or the next day, prompting me to leave a message for his mother that was never returned. By the third day, I was starting to get really worried. None of the other children knew where he was, and I couldn't stop thinking about what horrible event may have transpired. I didn't think the boy could really get his hands on poison, but what if his mother caught him doing something inappropriate and beat him for it? Or maybe they had a fight, and he ran away from home, and she never reported it, because she was glad to have him gone. I looked up his address in the school directory and decided to stop by after school. The apartment building David lived at looked like it used to be white, but there was so much paint peeling back from the muddy concrete that the building looked like it was enduring the last phase of a deadly disease. I knocked on his door and waited while I listened to a chair being pushed across the floor. Then one, two, three metal locks sliding out of place before the door opened. David was wearing Spider-Man pajama bottoms and shoes, but no shirt, standing on the chair to reach the higher locks. I was surprised by how quiet it was inside after how loud the phone call had been. "I've been waiting for you," David said, grinning from ear to ear. His mouth started to form the next word, but I cut him off. "Don't. Where is your mother?" I demanded. He only giggled, jumping off the chair to race back into the apartment. I took two steps in, quickly surveying the dirty carpets, the marked walls, the paper plates with crusts of food scattered across the floor. I quietly closed the door behind me, hesitating before I called aloud, "Mrs. Fobata?" Giggling from the kitchen on the right, I carefully crossed the floor, flinching as something sharp pierced my thin-soled sandal. I knelt down to pull a thumbtack out of the bottom of my shoe. This close to the floor, I could see hundreds of them scattered throughout the dirty carpet. It then occurred to me that the rusty red discoloration wasn't just dirt. It was dried blood from where someone had tried to flee over these tacks before. "Watch where you step," the boy called. "David, why are these things on the floor? This is dangerous." "Uh-huh," he agreed, peeking around the corner which separated me from the kitchen. Where is Mrs. Fobata?" "She tried to get away," he whispered, eyes wide and quivering behind his broken glasses. "Don't worry, she isn't my mother anymore." "David, this isn't funny. Who else lives here with you? I heard a lot of voices when I called." "I turned the TV way up so no one would hear her." I'd managed to pick my way through the tacks and was now standing over David in the kitchen. He crouched below the counter, holding a slingshot taut and ready. He wasn't aiming at me, but his muscles were locked and tense as he pointed at the ceiling. A stash of ammunition was piled behind him. I gripped the counter for balance, feeling faint and weak when I realized his slingshot was loaded with human teeth. "No, no, no, no," I heard myself say as I staggered away from him, and then turning to retreat toward the door, I felt the snap and the whir of something hurling past my head. I thought he missed me at first, but then the overhead light bulb smashed, sending the whole apartment into darkness. I took a hesitant step back toward the door, but a little hand around my ankle caught me by surprise and I went crashing down to my knees. I hunched over, protecting my head from a blow that never came. David wasn't trying to hurt me though. He was just stealing my sandals and throwing them away across the dark kitchen. "Don't leave me, Mom," he shouted. "I won't let you." "I'm not going to run," I said, rising once more to my feet. The idea of crossing back through all those tacks without my shoes was grotesque. "I don't want anything to happen to you," David pleaded. "I don't want to have to find another mother." "Okay, David, you win. I'm your mother now." "Really?" His voice cracked, so sweet and hopeful and desperate. My heart was beating out of my chest as I took a slow, deep breath. "That's right, David. I'm your mother, and as your mother, I want you to go to your room. You've been very naughty and you're in time out now." "Yes, Mom, okay," he declared enthusiastically. It was too dark to see anything more than his silhouette as he clambered up onto the counter, then down the other side as he retreated further into the apartment. 10 minutes, time out." "Okay, okay." His voice was muffled further back. "Then we're going to play together, aren't we, Mom? After time out, it will be okay again?" "Yes, David, then we're going to play for as long as you want," I said, pulling out my cell phone and dialing 911. "But I want you to wait the whole 10 minutes. I won't be your mother if I catch you trying to leave your room before then." He was still in his room when the police arrived. I got out of there as fast as I could after that, not having the heart to face him and admit that I had lied to him. As I left, I heard him screaming, "Mom, Mom, make them let go of me, Mom." But I wasn't brave enough to turn around and go back into that place of evil. I found out later that Mrs. Fobata was dead, but I made a point of never finding out exactly how she died. As for David, I don't know what he must have gone through to turn out that way, but I can only hope that whoever takes him in after this does so because they love him, and that he will learn love can only be given freely and never taken by force. That's the end of this story. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, let me know your thoughts in the comments below and like the video and subscribe if you're on YouTube. If you'd like to support the channel more, you can go to Patreon, where there's early access goodies there. And join our Discord if you'd like to come say hello and chat with all of us. If you'd like to send me your stories, you can do so at storiesaftermidnight.com, where you'll find a link that will lead you to a little form that you can fill out and send me your stories. Anyway, I appreciate you for listening. Hope you have a great day. We'll see you in the next one.